Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Obviously not the game the Bulls wanted, nor this sellout crowd here at the United Center at 21,698. But is that what Annie says? Tomorrow, there's always tomorrow. Tomorrow's a day away.
You know, when your wife is Ann and my wife is Ann and you throw Ann out there. Yep. But yes.
And the final score, Brooklyn 138, Bulls 112.
Chuck? Nope. See that version of Annie. I think he saw the non-equity bootleg version of Annie.
Did he see the version with Joe Ostrowski?
Is Herbert Hoover? Okay.
It's never not going to be funny, Todd and Dwight. It will never not be funny.
No, it's tomorrow, I love ya tomorrow. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was a thing last night. That was the Bulls with their little national coming out party and then their little national we'll be over here party. Vince Goodwill is on Twitter, at Vince Goodwill. He's an NBA writer for Yahoo Sports and a host at SiriusXM NBA. And as Mike Mulligan would say, a dear and valued friend. And he is with us now on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Vincent Goodwill. How are you?
Good morning, Chicago. How's everybody feeling?
Not great, but it's one outcome. What is your takeaway of the meaning of that game and how it all went down?
I mean, I think it was a perfect storm, I'm not going to pour salt into the wound of the Bulls fans, right? But you guys beat the Brooklyn Nets the first two meetings this year. They had to get a win out of you guys, especially when they had their big three intact. They were more motivated, and the Bulls won the second game of a back to back, and they were riding high because they had just beaten Detroit by like a million points. So I will say. And you're playing three games in four nights. Like, those things tend to happen. And that's not to say that if the Bulls had 5 days of rest and everything else was perfect, that the outcome would have been different. But I think that the Nets show that their elevator goes a little bit higher than virtually anybody else's in the NBA, including the Bulls. I think we can all agree that the Nets have been underachieving this year so far. And the Bulls, maybe by standard of wins, have played a little bit over their head. Maybe it just came back a little bit. And that's not to say that the Bulls don't have to fix some things, but the sky is not falling. Like, everybody just chill. You know what I mean? And if you wind up getting your teeth kicked in by the Nets in the second round of the playoffs or the Eastern Conference Finals, who's going to really be surprised?
That's it to me. And it's how you put it last night, too, when you were watching the game with us. This is not so much a referendum on the Bulls. It's just the Nets, when they are good, are that good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, here's my question. Did people not think the Nets were that good? Did people not think that Kevin Durant's not the baddest dude walking on the planet right now? Like, my question is, what were the expectations? Like, is it because we got a national TV game and you moved the time slot back so we could get in that second slot so everybody could see us? And then that's the performance we put up. Like, if you put that much weight on one game and it deflated you that much, then I think there's something wrong with your short and long-term outlook. Like, you're going to play Golden State in 2 days, and, you know, tomorrow, you know, in the same sort of situation where you're playing a team that has the best record in the league, and you're going to be in a similar situation. Do you need to put that much weight on two games when your body of work has said, in close games, we excel? When we have a full complement of players, we excel. We have two players who can create shots outside of the shot clock, outside of the framework of the offense, that basically nobody else in the league this side of Brooklyn can match. Like, to me, those are the sober approaches that you have to take right now. In addition to just acknowledging that, hey, that team that played us is really good, and when they're at their best, nobody's beating them.
I like to take my cue also from the behavior of the teams themselves, and the way the Nets bench, the way their whole team seemed to be reacting to what was going on. It looked like it mattered to them. It looked like they wanted to deliver a heat check. And when they felt themselves doing it, when they flexed a little bit, I don't know that they have to say it going in, and I'm not saying that Steve Nash is over there knocking over the whiteboard, but it was abundantly clear that it did matter in that regard to them.
Yeah, I think, and I was on the Zoom last night for the Kevin Durant postgame presser, and someone asked, I mean, I don't know if it was Nick Friedell, our good friend Nick, but it was somebody that said, hey, you know, do you think that the league was paying attention? And Kevin Durant said, no, who cares about sending the message to the league? We don't care anything about that. He sounded, you know, he almost sounded like the Chappelle skit with Rick James. He's like, you know, why would I grind my feet in the 80s couch? Like, I don't have any common sense in doing that. And he's like, yeah, I grinded my feet in Eddie's couch. Like, that's what Kevin Durant sounded like on the back end. And he was like, you know, we don't care if the league is watching, but we know the league was watching. So clearly, they were far more motivated than the Bulls were in this situation. And if you're a Bulls fan and you are dejected, that means you didn't have that much confidence in your team this season to begin with. If one game is enough to knock your confidence off from your team, from the body of work that they put out for the first 41 games or so, that means you don't believe in it and you think it's fool's gold.
Okay, so we haven't talked to you just about the Bulls in general and your impression of them so far this season. And Vinny, you know I miss you, and you know I love talking about Bulls with you. So as to what you've seen, when you compare it to what you're seeing out of the rest of the league, and it sounds like you think the Nets are the class of the NBA right now, what is your impression of the Bulls so far, especially when it comes to how DeMar DeRozan has performed?
Okay, guys, I'm going to say this really, really slowly because everybody knows that I hate the Bulls. I hate everything that they do, right?
Go back to Detroit. No, I'm just
go
kidding.
Back to Detroit, right? I'm going to say this very slowly. The Bulls have been the most refreshing, great story in the NBA this year, and I think it's sustainable. I appreciate it. I really like it. I think they are a second-round team at the least. I think they have the coaching, the shot making, the creativity, the defense, especially when you have Lonzo and Caruso pressuring you on the perimeter. Like, I think they have the ingredients to be able to be more than just a cute first round story. I think Cleveland is a cute first round story, but I think the Bulls, with this void that's been left by Philadelphia because they've had a bunch of nonsense, I think the Bulls are firmly a team that is going to make the second round. And to me, if you make the second round and your trajectory is going upward, that means you're a move or two away. You're subtly away from being a real contender for a championship. Assuming all goes well, like DeRozan, of course, is not 25 years old, but he's playing a sustainable brand of basketball. And we're seeing Zach LaVine elevate himself to a superstar sort of status that not many people thought he could achieve and be able to do this in a winning situation, and he's shown it. And you have a capable coach in Billy Donovan. I think what you have is a very solid foundation, and I think I will be in Chicago this spring because you will be playing in a meaningful playoff series, and I think that is really good for the NBA.
So if you are Arturis Karnišovas, Mark Eversley, Billy Donovan, and you're really talking truth about your roster and playoff matchups, we know in this league that you construct a roster to prepare for playoff matchups. and to say, well, if they do this, we can do this, and if they do this, we can do this, whether it's who guards Embiid or whether you imagine the team that you think is going to vanquish you, how do you make that less likely? How do you answer some of those questions right now, and what do you do for this year as opposed to future years if you're playing out the way the conference is going to age?
Well, I think you have to be careful not to get too drunk off of what you see this year and to feel like, hey, we can get to the finals if we're a move away this year. I don't think they're that close. That's not to say that I don't think what they're building is sustainable, but I do think that Miami, because of their organizational experience and everything else, and Milwaukee because they're the champs, and Brooklyn because they are Brooklyn, have a greater chance of making the NBA Finals this year. And I'm not sure if there's a move out there that simultaneously will help you for now and won't mortgage your future that will elevate you to basically above them. I don't know if there's a move out there. I don't see that. But I do think, are there little things that you can do that can fortify yourself? Can you get another big? Can you get, you know, a rim protector that in the playoffs when the game gets far more physical and the refs follow the whistles even more than they are this season? Can you do that? Yeah, because in the playoffs, as we've seen last year, as we've seen every year, you know, an ankle tweak here, a bad call there, you can find yourself around later than you thought you would. So I think it's incumbent upon them, those hard truths are, to me, it's less about the scoring part, because I feel like they have far enough scoring, and I feel like they have enough playmaking. I don't think they have elite playmakers as far as creating shots for other people, but I do think they have elite shot creators and shot makers. The one thing that I have as a concern would be who's going to protect the rim if there's a freeway there, if we can't keep up with you. Because as we saw last night, when Brooklyn started hitting shots, the Bulls started rushing things, and they couldn't make it ugly enough until their offense caught up. They had to try to match basket for basket, and that's what caught them in that malaise of turnovers and bad plays and everything else. Those things can snowball on you during the playoffs. If you get a rim protector or somebody with a little nasty, maybe that can help you through those lulls where maybe a 20-point lead is maybe a 10-point lead and you can still figure things out.
What do you think about Vucevic's fit right now with this Bulls team?
I still like it. I know that the team dynamic is totally different now than it was when he arrived in that trade for Wendell Carter. But I think ideally for someone like him, he is a third option. And I know people look at him and say, well, he was an all-star and everything else. Yeah, that's fine. But when you look at this being a perimeter-oriented league and you look at him and you say, okay, how does Zach LaVine fit perfectly on this roster? He fits perfectly as that, you know, 1A, 1B guy, along with a guy like DeRozan, and those two guys can alternate. There's only going to be so much for Vucevic. Now, granted, he's not a rim protector in that way. He's a body, but he's not necessarily going to be somebody that deters you from going to the rim. But you do need someone who can play free throw line and down. Even though DeRozan can get to the mid-range and everything else, you do need someone that can play in that second, that mid-tier level on the floor who can play 15 feet and in, and you don't have to give him the bulk of the touches. I'm sure he would like 25 a night, but that's just not the way that this team is going to be set up to be successful. And if he played next to someone who was a little more defensively inclined, I don't think that some of his, you know, shortcomings would be so much in focus.
Give us a full report as best you know it, including your editorial opinion on Jeremy Grant. That name keeps coming up. There are some intriguing aspects to this game. Is he's been at 27, he's been in the league forever, and is a bit of a late bloomer, and is believed to be perhaps available for the right price. What do you think of him?
I'm not sure that he is quite available. I think that's something that's been put out there. I think you can make the logical, you can draw, connect the dots, that he would be available because it's in the second year of a three-year contract and where the Pistons are as far as their rebuild, you would be better off getting something for him rather than him going into the third year. But I don't think that the Pistons are going to give him away. I think as a defender, he is best as a versatile guy. Someone you can plug and play. He can defend everything from 2 to 4 and maybe a little, and maybe small 5 in a pinch. Offensively, I think he's best as a third option, not a fourth option. If he wanted to be a fourth option, he would have stayed in Denver behind Jokic and Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., but he wanted to have a bigger role. And I don't think that after a year and a half, he's saying, you know what, I've had my fill of being the number one guy, and I'm willing to slide all the way down to being the fourth option. I think that's a little wishful thinking on the side of Bulls fans and saying and seeing the last name and saying, man, he's Horace Grant's nephew. It's in the blood and everything else. Nah, let's just be practical, folks. I think he is still someone at 27 years old that wants to find out where he fits in the league as an individual more than he is, hey, I'm just willing to go be a cog to a championship winning piece. And I'm not sure that he would be the right piece or the best piece, even if he were willing, for a team like the Bulls. I don't think he necessarily fits in that way because I don't think scoring is the Bulls' problem. I think you have more than enough scoring. I think you need a little more size and a little more nasty, and I'm not sure that's exactly Jeremy Grant. And I'm also not sure what you could offer Detroit over, you know, some of these other teams if he were to be put on the market in terms of, okay, we need size and athleticism, and they also need strong guard play. Are you guys willing to part with Kobe White at this point when he's starting to show a little more light and a little more, you know what I mean, a little more athleticism, the light has come on and everything else? Are you willing to part with that for a player? Not sure it's going to put you over the top?
Yeah, that's the question, is whether or not Kobe White ends up getting traded. And while you're here, as we're trying to figure all of this out leading up to the All-Star break, you mentioned the Sixers. That's the wild card to me in the East, is if they're going to actually come through or not. But the West is the question mark right now. How do you assess what you're seeing in the West?
Well, I think everything has flipped for years, for decades. Almost you can say since Michael Jordan's retirement. And
yes,
maybe even before Michael Jordan's, you know, retirement. I think Michael Jordan was just the sun, basically, that everything revolved around. But the West might have still been the stronger conference even then. I think the pendulum has finally shifted to the East being the stronger conference. And luckily for the Bulls, they were not sitting on their hands waiting to take advantage of a bad East, which is why they are sitting at the top of a good Eastern conference, because they made the right moves and have been proactive. Out West, I think it's essentially two teams at the top in Golden State and Phoenix that have sort of championship DNA. Memphis is a team that is coming. They very much remind me, people, of a team that was so near and dear to my heart, a team that got under everybody's skin. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? A team that got under everybody's skin, that upset people, that played physical, that came from a tough town, and they had a really dynamic point guard.
I'm thinking the Tom Thibodeau bench mob Bulls.
Yes, except they never won anything.
Oh, come on!
I'm sorry,
Vinny's talking about Detroit.
Did I say something? Did I say something wrong? Did the bench mob Bulls ever win anything?
There it is. No, I just you're right though. These fun, exciting, gritty, grindy teams are great until the other team has one or more future Hall of Famers to kick your ass.
Absolutely, but I think it adds to the texture of the league's story and the fact that I've always said this, and it's one thing I've kind of lamented about the previous administration in Chicago. There's nothing more I hate than the punk-ass GMs who feel comfortable being a 50-win team in a second-round knockout. Go for it. And I look at Memphis as a team that's young enough that they can basically make a little noise this year and then be a big-time problem in the future. But if they choose to say, you know what, we'll go after Golden State now because Klay is on demand and not the full version of himself, and we don't trust Phoenix and Chris Paul in the playoffs, and we want to go for it now, I wouldn't be against that. So put it like this, guys. I think that the playoffs are going to shape up to be really entertaining past the first round, and it has nothing to do with LeBron James.
Always love talking NBA with you. And, man, lucky you. You got a hell of a league to cover this year. It is just never-ending stuff and drama and levels of Twitter folded into this that I think the league and everybody else is embracing with some of the interactions. So enjoy. We always appreciate you taking the time to spend a few with us.
I got a question for you guys.
Yes.
Like, like, I'm no longer a Detroit Lions fan. Like, I got off of that drug about 22, 23 years ago. But, like, what's going on with the Bears? Like, I'm trying to figure out.
What's up with the Bears?
I'm trying to figure this out. Like, I follow you guys on Twitter. I see the misery of Bears fans every weekend. And I was watching, and I was like, they can't put up with this. Like, you know, what's going on? Like, let me in on this. Or is it just going to be Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay forever? Which I wouldn't mind.
Oh, they can put up with this because they have put up with this.
It's
so
we.
Hopefully the
we yeah. You got to own it. We put up with this. We have no choice. This is the
existence. You're in a dysfunctional relationship. You refuse to leave the person that's doing you wrong.
This is the existence we have chosen.
Codependent, I call it, Vinny. But I think they might have at least put together a good candidate list to interview. Now, will they hire the right person out of these candidates? That's a whole other issue.
Have we gotten the quarterback position completely right? Have we won enough games? Do we love rhetorical questions that we use to make fun of Ted Phillips? Yes.
Yes.
See, when I'm not a Lions fan, I can make fun of every team. Isn't that beautiful?
I think you're probably lying. There's no way you'd be that proudly offering the fact that you're no longer a Lions fan if you weren't sort of secretly kind of one.
Dan, July 27th, 1999, I quit. Barry Sanders quit. I quit.
Adding the specificity does make it sound more convincing. I just think there's a, like, when that parade happens, when they're hoisting Dan Campbell above everyone and they're marching down the streets, somewhere a part of you is going to want to be there.
If that's the case, I will be on a float next to Nia Long and Kelly Rowland, because that ain't happening.
We got the Nia Long reference in.
There it is.
Oh, this is perfect. This is the perfect appearance.
Kid Rock are going to be next to each other swinging out a bottle of whiskey together.
That was the worst. That was the worst retirement.
Kid Rock, y'all.
No. I'm with you on Barry Sanders, man. The older I get, the more I just wish I could have watched all his games live.
Greatest running back of all time.
Ooh, that's a ooh. Good Will. Thanks, man. We could spend all day. Appreciate it.
You're the best, buddy.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.